Welcome to A Claire Perspective, the Patriot podcast brought to you by fullpresscoverage.com. I am your host, Claire Clousey, Claire Cooper, and I welcome in Boston sports media darling himself, the one, the only, the beloved, Tom Curran. TC, how's things with you?
Everything's good, CC. What's going on with you?
I'm just happy to be here talking to you.
Excellent. I couldn't be pleased, more pleased than I am right now. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah. So I have a bone to pick with you, but I'm going to pick it a little bit later because I want to quickly get your info on, because I know that it's a massive topic at the moment and it was something that you broke in regards to Kendrick Bourne. Now, I know there's lots of things flying around with him kind of being in the doghouse for Matt Patricia, that kind of thing. So I'm not going to ask you the full details because I know it's out there. But I do want to ask you, do you think we're going to be seeing him playing more on Sunday?
I do. And, you know, just to take it through the entire timeline, there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, Kendrick Bourne carved a really nice niche last year under Josh McDaniels. 55 catches, yeah. 800 yards, very dependable receiver that Mac Jones trusted quite a bit. Mm-hmm. In this offseason, as the Patriots are transitioning to an offense that features fewer wide receivers, and they have brought in Devontae Parker and Tyquan Thornton and started pivoting more to two tight ends on the field, I think that Kendrick Bourne has had some trepidation about where things are headed. And Albert Breer reported that as they install an offense that's similar to what Bourne played in San Francisco, Bourne has shown some, I guess the best way to characterize what Albert is saying is irritation or second guessing about the way it's gone. So mm-hmm. I'm sure that hasn't escaped the attention of Matt Patricia, who's at the point of it. Additionally, Bourne, if that's riding sidecar to him showing up late for a meeting prior to, and only 2 minutes late, I was told, but showing late to a meeting prior to the Carolina Panthers preseason game and hence mm-hmm. being sent home, plus during that week leading into the Panthers game, he got tossed out of a practice for throwing a punch during that scrum and also got tossed out of a rep by Bill Belichick for not really even having his equipment ready. So I think there's a persistent irritation that the Patriots have had with Bourne's readiness. Mm-hmm. Additionally, I think he's had an irritation with the direction of the offense and his role in it. But to see his role diminish to the point where he only had two snaps on Sunday and then the one catch for 41 yards, he's a favorite of Mac Jones. I think that it's pretty obvious from things we've observed, he gets along very well with Robert Kraft. And Robert Kraft said in the offseason, Claire, look, we need for Mac to make a second-year jump, the players who we brought in 2021 to make a jump with him. We need more production from them. We think we will get that in 2022. And now Bourne, who was a productive player last year, taking a backseat to so many players and not even being able to find his way on the field, is discordant with that. And I think I know that it caught the owner's eyes. I was able to have folks close to the situation tell me that Kendrick Bourne and his usage on Sunday were something that Robert Kraft was not over the moon about.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that anything goes towards just how much depth that they have at wide receiver at the moment, though, that he only saw the field bits and pieces because they're trying to sort of work out where they're going with the offense with all these wide receivers that they've got in the building?
Yeah. Certainly could be. It sounds like a plausible reason, but I'd also counter that if you bring in a guy and give him a decent contract and he gives you very good returns on that contract, there's got to be a way, no matter what scheme you're running, to find a way to put him on the field so that he can contribute. The 41-yard catch being a smoking gun reason as to why. So that's all well and good if you want to pivot the offense. It's a side story how well that's going. But if you want to pivot the offense and you're pivoting it away from a productive player, and when the productive player is on the field, he's making plays, is it a great idea? Mm. So whatever, why they're doing it or why he's been, you know, marginalized is less important than whether or not he should have been.
Sure. No, yeah, I fully appreciate. You mentioned.
Really?
Yes. Yes. I do.
I think that's a lot of what the conversation in turn becomes is, well, they couldn't get him on the field because they're changing the offense and you can only have so many wideouts on the field at one time.
Yeah.
Yes. I understand that. But isn't this a player who established a level of play for you previously that kind of demands more than two snaps?
No, yeah, I couldn't not agree with you on that one. Now, just to sort of turn back the clock a little bit so that I can ask this question. The Patriots 2020 draft of tight ends, in theory, they became no-shows. And let me just quote you, and Ryan Izzo ain't cutting it. I mean, I've got to say, TC, that one did hurt. But I do digress. Would you say that it was bad scouting, you know, poor transition into the NFL, the coaching, the player discipline, or just really unfortunate to maybe whiff on two tight ends in the same draft with Asiasi and Key?
Well, I think that it's scouting prior to the 2020 draft. You know, you knew Rob Gronkowski. Look, the Patriots were a two tight end team until 2013 when Aaron Hernandez was arrested for murder. And went to jail. So then it was really Gronk. They brought in Martellus Bennett. They brought in Scott Chandler. They were seeking a second tight end to be complementary to Gronk. Meanwhile, Gronk's brittleness was pretty well established over that time. Yet from 2011 or 2012 to 2020, they drafted Lee Smith, Ryan Izzo, and I can't remember which other tight end. Guys like George Kittle were coming into the league in the fifth round in 2015. He's an Iowa player who played with Kirk Ferentz, who Belichick knew well. I remember writing a story in like 2018, 40 tight ends had been taken in the draft over the previous 4 years, and the Patriots hadn't taken any. So to not take any tight ends at all, when you really only have one productive one, and you're actively trying to chase him off, as the Patriots were in early 2018 when they're trying to trade him to Detroit, shouldn't you be drafting some tight ends to help the offense? And then to make two picks in 2020 in the third round of guys who never end up making any impact at all, five total catches. Is that scouting? Is that Bill's decision making? It's hard to blame it on the players, I think. But does it land there too? I mean, it seems to be a little bit of a mismanagement of the roster when you see the second round picks that were taken and the third round picks that were taken in that span that perhaps could have been used on tight ends, the ones that didn't contribute very much.
So moving it on to sort of the future, because the next thing is the Steelers game. What do you believe is the keys against the Steelers for success? Is it more internal for the Patriots, or is it just the game against the, is it just general on the opponent more so?
I think it's 1,000,000% on execution. Because, you know, as much as I bristled at Bill Belichick saying, hey, it was just two plays on Sunday, because those plays, especially the two sacks that were allowed and one of them being strip sack, are indicative of what we've watched throughout the offseason. So it's not like this came out of the blue suddenly. It's a pattern of what's been going on. But if they can fix that and prevent the defense from scoring on them, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers, with a lesser offense than the Miami Dolphins, and they do have a lesser offense, will have a hard time getting past 10 points against the Patriots. So can the Patriots cobble together 13, 14, 17 points against Pittsburgh? I should hope they will. So to me, it all comes down to, can you not give up points with your offense on the field? And then you'll be fine. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Sorry. No. I thought you finished. Yeah. No, completely. Do you think that the Brian Flores aspect of the Steelers is going to be a huge advantage?
I spoke to Mark Caboli from The Athletic Pittsburgh yesterday, and he indicated that Flores has already had a huge impact.
Makes sense.
I think it could have a significant impact. I mean, what they did to Joe Burrow on Sunday shows how much of an impact I think that Flores is already having on that team. And they're a blitz-heavy team to begin with. So they'll know what the Patriots like to do. Flores has had great success against the Patriots as a head coach, even with lesser teams talent-wise in Miami. So I think it's definitely a factor going into this one.
Do you think, or how much onus would you put on kickers and long snappers now after seeing the Bengals shenanigans the weekend then?
I think it's always huge. And especially when you go to Pittsburgh, it's a tough place to kick, going to the open end of the stadium. So it's going to be a big deal on Sunday, but I think the Patriots can feel pretty secure, at least that their special teams, kickers in particular, are a pretty capable bunch.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you not think that's the one thing that you can kind of look and be right, actually, I'm confident in, is kind of the long snappers and the kickers aspect of the Patriots team?
Yeah, there are a lot of things on this team that you can look at and feel confident in. There are a lot of things with the Patriots. You know, the safety play, the secondary play, the speed on offense that they tried to upgrade and seem to have successfully done, the front seven play. Those are all things that you can look at as a Patriots fan and be encouraged by. Offensively, you can look at a promising quarterback. You can look at running backs. You can look at talent at the skill positions. Because even though Kendrick Bourne should be on the field more, at least there's more talent around to reasonably say, with a straight face, well, we just have too many wideouts. Because they do have a lot of wideouts. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether Bourne should play two snaps or 15 or 22, whatever. They have talent on offense. The problem the team has right now is the coaching staff being held together by duct tape and bubblegum.
Wow.
So that's, and it's not on defense. You know, Brian Belichick deserves credit at the safety position. Steve Belichick deserves credit in the play calling job. Mike Pellegrino with the corners, Gerard Mayo, all those coaches deserve credit. But there has to be a cogency to the offensive play calling to take advantage of the talent that they have. Remember, this should not be a bridge team and a rebuilding team.
Right.
It went to the playoffs last year. It had a Pro Bowl quarterback. It should be ascending and building on last year. And just because Josh McDaniels left and took a few coaches with him, they shouldn't have been receding as drastically as they are.
Mm-hmm. Talking of coaching, I know it's bouncing a little bit back to the Steelers, but Matt Canada is in his first season as an OC. He's only been with the Steelers since 2020. Could this, if you're a Steelers fan, be of cause for concern for you? Or the flip side, is this something that the Patriots can feel could work in their favor?
Well, that in the presence of Mitch Trubisky, who, you know, made some decisions on Sunday, which were interesting. I think that it is interesting. You know, we can look at the Miami Dolphins and say, well, Mike McDaniel's a first-year head coach, and he had success. But he also had Darrell Bevell with him, former Detroit Lions and Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator. So, honestly, I'm not that up on the Steelers' entire offensive coaching scheme at this juncture. Will be as the week goes along.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's always going to be aspects that Bill Belichick will try and highlight. And that's what's interesting, too, is how much time is Bill devoting now to which sides of the ball, given the way the first week went, and how much help it seems the offense may need in game planning.
Mm-hmm. So trying to be positive, as you've been brilliantly positive about this, which is utterly adore, so thank you. Who is your current Patriots superstar then, TC? Granted, it's only week one.
I'm a big Kyle Duggar guy. I hated the mistake that he made on Sunday in coverage. He needed to play back, especially given the situation, especially given the speed of Jalen Waddle, and he got over aggressive. But I think overall, I've been pleading for speed at the linebacker level, and I know that he's a safety, but he is such a huge contributor and a big dude who can play at that second level. I'm a big Kyle Duggar guy. And, you know, I think Jacoby Myers' first week performance was, again, outstanding. And he continues to, I think, build on what we've seen in terms of being a little bit more dynamic in what he does, not necessarily after the catch, but body control and ability to go up and get the ball, which he showed on Sunday, was eye-opening. So good work by him.
Nice. Yeah, I agree with that one. Finally, just a quick one. So were you pleasantly surprised by anything on Sunday, performance-wise? Or any other reason, actually.
It was interesting and instructive that they incorporated so much of their run game principles that they've had in the past into their game. mm-hmm. because that was the strength of them. So going away from it for whatever user-friendly offensive upside that they were going to seek and banging their heads against the wall was something that they really seemed to have a hard time mastering mm-hmm. in the summer is good. You know, it's game time. It's these games count. You need to try and win them. So if you are best as a straight ahead running team, even if you have already, you know, jettisoned your fullback, you still have to find a way to be a team that runs through the gaps in the middle of the offensive line, as opposed to a team that runs wide. So I liked to see that. And I like to see, you know, that aspect of what the Patriots saw. That was pleasantly surprised to see them make sure that they stuck with. And I like the first drive. You know, Bill Belichick has made mm-hmm. a point to say we did some things. You know, we were over midfield on six of our drives. And that's great. And he's not wrong there. It was productive. But it will get more difficult as you cross midfield. So they have the talent to cross midfield. Do they have the brain power to script plays and craft plays that scheme up ways to exploit a defense to get into the end zone? That's mm-hmm. where that has to work. And it has to work on the sidelines and in concert with Mac Jones. And we'll see if they can start to do that. But it's going to continue to be an extreme uphill climb from where they were with the offensive coaching to where they've decided to go now.
And in your experience, what are you sort of, as a guy that's sort of watched this team for a while, granted it's a different team now, what are you expecting on Sunday? What would not surprise you to see on Sunday when they play the Steelers?
It wouldn't surprise me to see the Patriots be drastically better, maybe go mm-hmm. five wides open and let Mac Jones kind of dissect. Depends on his back situation. But sure. I think they look good when he is in extreme command at the line of scrimmage. Extreme command. And, you know, it's hard, but, you know, there has to be more of a direction to the plays they're calling in terms of what are they yeah. trying to get at? What weakness are they trying to exploit? Or what strength of their own are they trying to accentuate? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that they've thought of that. Not just saying, let's run toss left, let's run toss right, let's run, you know, slant here and out there. But the cogency of the plan you would see with Josh McDaniels. It was all about trying to exploit matchups, exploit scheme deficiencies. And that's high level stuff that mm-hmm. they need to work toward.
Yeah. Well, TC, thank you so much. I know that like you squeezed me in, so I very much appreciate your time and you chatting to me today. So just quickly for anybody out there that doesn't know how to find you, just tell them how to find you on social media and such.
Oh, definitely. At Tommy Curran, TommyCurran on Twitter. And of course, NBC Sports Boston. You have our Twitter account. You can catch us on the television as well. So I appreciate yes. you, Claire.
Oh, no, that's great. So that's it for another episode of A Claire Perspective, folks. So tune in next time and go Pats.
Hi there, you lovely lot. Thank you for listening. Bit of a shorter episode this week as Tom E. Curran squeezed me into his busy schedule. So huge thanks to him for doing that. Please don't forget, wherever you download your podcast from, you can still get my Women in the NFL trilogy with the lovely Karen Garigian, Erica Tamposi and Dr. Jessica Flynn. Please don't forget to check out patspropaganda.com where you will find my game recaps of Patriots games each and every week. Thank you for downloading my podcast, brought to you by fullpresscoverage.com. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. For my written work, head over to patspropaganda.com where you'll also find my exclusive Tight Ended t-shirt designs.